Welcome into another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball with Mike Gaber. How are you doing this afternoon on this chilly January afternoon, Mike?
Yeah, doing well. Had some memories of the Cajun days of the 70s and 80s over the weekend when I attended the rodeo. Great atmosphere in Boston Coliseum for that event, but you know, obviously the place needs a little work if it were going to be a basketball arena again.
The best thing to do is implode it and start over.
Agreed. But it was fun to be at the rodeo. Yeah. But it was a lot of great memories from the time when I was a young man and a student.
Yeah, I think using it for that event on one weekend or for one week is one thing, but using it, trying to use it 3 or 4 months out of the year is not really, and I'm not going to get into it all. The bathrooms are a dump. The place is a dump.
Well, my wife and our sister-in-law, who's in visiting from out of town, had to leave a bathroom because of a water flood issue.
Yeah. So, all righty, let's get talking basketball here. The Cajuns went to Troy. Frustrating game, I will say that, because Cajuns had their opportunities. But your thoughts on the first half?
Well, I was concerned early in the game. One of the very first possession, there was a loose ball. We couldn't grab possession. It was batted back and forth between a couple of people, and it caused us to have a shot clock violation. And shortly thereafter, Demas Folks was called for a foul with 1 second left on the shot clock for Troy. At that point in the game, it was still nip and tuck. But it gave me evidence of, you know, Breaks and I may not be going with us tonight. You know, there's a loose ball out there, causes a shot clock violation, questionable foul with 1 second. But then, you know, as the game went on, it seemed like there were a lot of turnovers on both teams. So I know the Cajuns ended up with more. And there was a normal feeling out period beyond the breaks being going against us. I thought, well, maybe we'll be okay here since Kobe and Demas were both able to score. Remember last week we talked about they were not scoring in the basket? Well, in this case, they listened to us. They took our advice. They made a couple of mid-ranges. Demas made a couple of floaters in the lane. And then that allowed them to finish at the basket. And so it was nip and tuck. Now, those bugaboo turnovers showed up again at the end of the half, you know, where it was nip and tuck, and then Troy extends out the 7-point lead, again on some more Cajun turnovers. I don't know if you noticed this, but I gave a lot of credit to Troy in that game. They have quick feet, like most people do when they're trying to play defense, but they really had quick hands. A lot of their turnovers with the Cajuns came on stolen passes. Some of them were attributed to the guy passing the ball, some attributed to the guy catching the ball, but Troy had a lot of quick hands, got their hands on a lot of passes. They lead the league in steals, and some of the turnovers that we were attributed to, they were attributed to steals, so that allowed them to take a quick lead. Did you notice how quick their hands were?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think Troy is Scott Cross, I've been a Scott Cross fan since he was a UTA. We talked about it last week. Scott Cross is a very good coach, and there was a reason that, you know, there's a reason right now that they're playing so well, and they're 5-0 in conference because they're a really good team. And I think they're going to give – I'm trying to see right now if they play JMU this year, or if it looks like that might be the team that they miss on the
– on the Eastern crossover?
Yeah, but they played App. They beat App State, who I still think App State is the best team in the league, who beat JMU last weekend. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, yeah. Troy. Troy forced those turnovers. Those were not just dribbling off your leg, dribbling them off your foot, going out of bounds type thing. Troy is a very good basketball team.
Yeah, you give credit to the opponent. Agree with you there. And their win against App State, we talked about it last week, was a game that went right down to the wire. It was at Troy. Troy is 5-0 in the league. I believe they're the only undefeated team at this stage.
Yes, because Marshall went down to South Alabama.
We'll talk about that later in the show here today. But Troy won their first game, conference game on the road. Then they played 4 straight home games. After they won a couple, they got a little confidence. And we'll see how they do when they go on the road. And talk about Scott Cross. He wasn't out of work very long when he left UTA. He was hired at Troy pretty quickly after that. Another smart thing they did, you know, other teams generate scouting reports just like us. they seemed to take Joe Charles away. And Joe had a great game, you recall, against Coastal Carolina, where he was Louisiana Player of the Week. He only got two shots off in the first half. But when you don't get your shots off that quick, you get out of rhythm. Obviously, they were on their scouting report. You know, he got his normal rebounds, but not to the extent that we have seen in the past. So, again, credit to Troy for forcing turnovers and limiting who was the hot player in the game before. So,
you know, I don't know this, but I know, I mean, I don't know it in particular to Joe, and I'm not making excuses for him, but there's a little flu bug going around last week with the Cajun basketball team. I don't know maybe if Joe had a little bit of that or not. I'm not making excuses, but let's be honest. Joe is not going to go out every game and play like he played the previous week. So
Coastal Carolina, he really doesn't get enough shots. He was hot that day. The team looked for him. As far as the flu goes, Blake Butler did not make the trip because of the flu. So he didn't play in either game. And I know Hosanna Katanje, I can't remember, Katanje, had a touch of it before they left. And he played but he also had some turnovers as well.
Yes. That was still the effects of the flu as well with him, because he was not cleared until the day before the team left for Troy. So. Yeah.
And that had to affect your,
stamina.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a 7-point lead at half, which is not that big of a deal in college basketball. You know, 10-point swings happen regularly. So, early part of the second half, you know, the team played pretty even and stays to a 6-8-point lead. You know, Gage's defense is a little aggressive at times. That allows Troy to get the ball inside. You know, we're pressuring the ball, and they made some good shots. We're scoring a little bit ourselves to match them. Hosanna's getting a few baskets inside. There was a really nice play I like talking about Kobe, where he did a little pick and pop where he just picked Demas's man, caught the ball at the elbow, and fired in a nice 15-foot floater. Wish we'd do more of that. Then, you know, I guess, what is it? Around the second media, right after, the Cajuns make a run. And all of a sudden, we go from down 5 or 6 to up 2 to 3. Brandon Hardy was a big part of that, you know, got an old-fashioned 3-point play, I believe. There was a huge play in the game, too, that I remember listening to Jay Walker at the time. We were in the middle of that run where he got a steal. He goes up straight down the middle, lays it up over the top of the rim, and it hits the back of the rim and bounces out. And Jay Walker said, man, use the glass. Well, to do that, you've got to actually change your angle a little bit to give yourself a little angle to be able to use the glass or dunk it. He might not have felt he was in control to dunk it, but that 3-point lead we acquired could have been 5 on that missed layup. And I'm not saying anything against Brandon. He played great. But, you know, the fact is that play hurt us. And soon thereafter, Hosanna got his 4th foul, and the momentum for the Cajun stops. You know, and Troy retakes the lead, but it's close. It's 1- or 2-point game. But, you know, Hosanna's got a couple of times where he's at the line, and he makes one, misses one, the ball goes in and out. We're also trying to get the ball to him late in the game. And he's got a couple of shots right at the goal that also spin it out. And, you know, so again, you know, could have had a bigger lead. You just mentioned earlier, frustrated. Yeah, that's indicative of the frustration you talk about. But then the play of the game to me was, okay, Troy's at the line. They got fouled. They got a 1-point lead. They make 2 free throws. They press us a little bit. And Timus Folks has the ball stolen from him. And there's a foul called. And Troy shoots 2 more. And that 1-point lead goes to 5 points. In a matter of like 2 seconds, with all 4 of the shots coming from the line. I thought it was obvious Timus was fouled. Troy played with through him. Foul's called on Timus. What I guess he's trying to retrieve the ball. Not saying the ref was obviously cheating or anything. He just missed the call. He may not have been looking at it appropriately. But, you know,
Timus that is one of
maybe a little bit extreme, but, you know, it was almost that. So that's a huge play in the game. Game was over at that point.
Yeah, and I don't mind the no call against Themis, but then you do a no call on Themis coming back, you know?
Yeah, he was trying to get the ball back. He was out of bounds. He was sitting his butt out of bounds when the foul was called on him.
Yeah, I did not like the call, and I'm not going to – but something I do want to bring up and that you mentioned is a shout-out to Brandon Hardy. I think he came into the weekend shooting about 50% from the free throw line. He hit 3 of 3 and plus with that and one from the free throw line. You know, it's 12 points in the game, came up huge for us. And we need something like that from the bench guys. Every game, we're going to need somebody to step up like that. And I know we missed a couple free throws, but we shot 75% from the line. So not a horrible day shooting from the free throw line.
No, it's just those late in the game, those two I talked about that Hosanna missed, which could have given us the lead.
Yes.
It was just came at a critical time. And let me emphasize here, I'm not saying the officials cost the Cajuns the game. I'm just saying there was one call in particular that went against us. The Cajuns had too many turnovers.
You're not going to win too many games with 20 turnovers.
Right. And then if the game started on turnover with a shot clock violation. And again, I looked through the line. There's several players who struggled. There just was one guy who had eight. Several had three or four up and down the lineup. Like I said, sometimes the turnover was credited to the guy receiving the pass. Sometimes it was credited to the guy making the pass. So you couldn't point to one guy. So,
No, and again, Troy had 16 steals. You know, how many of those were good on their part? It probably helped.
Most of them, I would say.
Yeah, you know, they shot 91% from the line in the first half, which probably helped them maintain that lead, that 7-point lead. So, you know, I said very frustrating, and it was very frustrating, but, I mean, there were some positives that came out of that game.
Yeah, one thing is the Cajuns came back from a 7-point deficit and actually took the lead and fought till the end, which they usually do. Another positive was that we were out and rebounded an opponent. That's unusual. Hosanna had 9 rebounds. You remember you called saying last week, sometimes he's 2-4 under the basket, and that's why he's not getting as many rebounds as he possibly could. I think he did better at that this game. And
you know,
that's Alabama as well. That's Alabama.
Yeah, we talked about that watching the game, and I said that at the beginning of the game, and he seemed to be out a little further. There were a couple times, though, he's still far too, especially on a and I don't know that he's far enough about it, or if he's letting himself be not necessarily pushed, or if the defensive player has a hand on his back, just not allowing him to back up. So
yeah, it's reaction time at times. His reaction time may have been improved a little bit.
Yeah.
Another positive is Kobe and Timas, who had been struggling. You know, two Cree offensive guys both hit over 50%. So when the game was over, I said, well, you know, disappointed, frustrating loss. But other turnovers, the Cajuns didn't really play poorly. And again, a lot of that goes to Troy. You know, give them credit. You talked about their steals. They lead the league in steals by a wide margin. We'll play them again here in the upcoming homestand. And maybe a little more patience on our passes, as we demonstrated against Arkansas State. We'll limit the amount of turnovers, and we'll have a better chance. And Joe seems to play a lot better at home offensively. I think Joe had his fair usual number of rebounds. What number of rebounds did he get? He had 7.
7, yeah.
So still a good number despite not scoring much that day.
Yeah.
So we talked last week, the team actually chartered into Troy, and they chartered to Arkansas State, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I read some on social media. Someone was poking fun of the team. The chartering didn't help. Well, it goes more to it than just the game. You know, there's school as a part of it, and it helps you for the next game. And the next game was against Arkansas State Saturday afternoon. And I didn't know what to think about this because I knew how many threes that they shoot, and they scored 85 points their previous game against Arkansas State, against Texas State, rather. So I knew defense would be critical for the Cajuns. And game starts, and right away I'm encouraged because there's a regular shot clock violation on the Wolves, opposite of the game against Troy. And it was obvious the Cajuns, as the first half went on, were focused on running off the Wolves from the three-point line. That was obvious game plan. I don't know who had the scout on that for that game, but the defensive game plan was excellent. Did you notice that as well early in the game?
Yeah, I think the defense and Arkansas State is a much improved team. They had the toughest non-conference schedule when league play started. So, you know, it's one of those things that yes, their record says one thing, and it's one of those things that, yeah, your record is not who they say you are type of deal. I think Arkansas State is a better team. I don't think they're App State. I don't think they're Troy. I don't think they're JMU, but they're a better team than they were a year ago.
I agree with that. Well, with the Cajuns running the Wolves off the three-point line, Fields, their little guard, was going to take it to the basket. And he had some success doing that, both at the line and scoring. I think he had 14-some points in the first half. And conversely, Hosanna Kantanje for the Cajuns was going to have a big game. That was obvious from the beginning, too. And I thought it was really critical. Maybe, I don't know, first five or six possessions, he actually had passes out when he's doubling the post for some assists. We got a couple of threes out of that. I think Kobe made one. And I've been critical of his play when he doesn't pass it out of the post as quickly as he should, when he doesn't recognize the double. So in this game, he did early in the game. And then the Wolves played him straight up from that point on, and he was effective the whole game. You know, we just talked about that. You know, we had a little lead about halfway through the half with this effective offense. You know, we hit some mid-range shots with Kobe and Demas, especially again. Yeah. Then end of the half, there was a huge swing. You know, we have a two-point lead. Fields is shooting two shots. It makes the first. It's one. Oh, man, we had a three-point lead. We had a three-point lead. Yeah. He makes the first shot, cuts the lead to two. And then there's a rebound off a miss. Rare miss by Fields from there. And the Cajuns do a great job of pushing it, get the rebound, push it. And Michael Thomas buries a deep three, high arcing shot from the wing. And that what could have been a one-point lead became a five-point lead. That was a huge play. So it shows you how every play counts. That just a missed free throw by Fields was huge. Suppose he makes that shot, you know, so instead of the two-point lead for the Cajuns, the one-point lead, then they set their defense. We probably can't beat them back down court in transition and get that transition three for Thomas. So, yeah, I thought that was a huge play and it bode well for us. How do you feel at the half?
I felt great. I felt really good at the half. A little nervous, honestly, with only eight players on the bench. But at the same time, when you end a half with only one turnover and a half, you got to feel good about a team that's taking control of the ball and not killing themselves. So obviously you're probably not going to do that in the next half, but at the same time, it did somewhat carry over to the second half because you only had five turnovers in the second half. So I really like that play. I think Michael Thomas has been playing excellent basketball. Hardy was out in the concussion protocol. So just a rough day with some of the guys being with the flu and some concussions. So I thought overall, great performance.
Well, with only eight players, you have to manage the minutes. So we'll get to something I think Coach Moreland did that was critical to do that. You know, there was a stretch in there as he's managed the minutes. We didn't either have Hosanna or Kobe, our two leading scorers in the game. And the Wolves made another mini run, and, you know, cut the lead to a couple baskets. Thought a huge play was Kyron Radliff. You know, he struggled at times, but he got an and one to fall. Got a shot off the glass, off I think his offensive rebound, and made the free throw, nothing but net. And that was huge because Coach was sitting Hosanna at that time, and he was waiting for the under 12 sec timeout or the second media timeout. You know, took him out with about 13 and a half minutes to go. You know, was trying to push it with Hosanna sitting. And Kyron making that shot actually helped us, you know, maintain the lead. And, you know, but about 11 and a half minutes ago, Coach pulls Radliff and puts Hosanna back in. You know, managing the minutes was really important with only eight guys. You have to be very careful. So we didn't have many fouls in the first half. They started to add up in the second half, but fortunately we held off.
You know, I don't think coaches or Coach Marlin in particular, because this is what we're talking about right now, gets enough credit for handling those minutes. I was sitting watching the game with some friends and they talked about why did he take Hosanna out? He's got the, you know, and I'm like, look at where we are in the game. If this next 45 seconds or so take 2 minutes to play, then you got 2 minutes during the timeout, you know, and by the time we come back, you know, he's got a good 4 or 5 minute rest. And that's huge in a basketball game, especially again, you know, it's 3 days later, but still coming off the flu. We don't know how much after effects they had there. But Hosanna had one of he's played 29 minutes the last two games, mainly because he's been able to stay out of foul trouble as well, especially in the first half.
Well, you talked about why sit him there, and one of the other answers besides getting rest if he gets a little wind, that's when you're more likely to commit an unnecessary foul.
So, and that's what he was doing at Troy. I think he was exhausted. I think the flu probably had something to do with it. And he was reaching, and he wasn't moving his feet because of that, like you said. Good call, Mike.
Well, when he gets back in, the Cajuns continue to feed him. He continues to score, and we extend our lead to 15. And I give credit to the Cajun guards here. In the past, sometimes, you know, when we try to force the ball into him, that's when the turnovers occur, or he's not moving from the reposition. I remember in the McNeese game that they fronted him, and we, in the first, second half, after having a good first half, we didn't do a very good job. Well, the way you handle that is, okay, you're just a little patient, you know, for him to repost twice, three times if need be, while the ball continues to move till they get to the right spot. And I remember one time, actually, London Fields didn't play much, but he had a ball on the wing. He could have shot a three. He waited for his honor to get the position of the post, and he made a nice pass to him, and he scored. So that allowed us to get the 15-point lead, but it was only on the offense. The defense, too, they continue to run the Wolves off the line. And I don't know if people realize this, too. When the Wolves would run them off the line, they'd penetrate. Sometimes they got to the rim, but they were penetrating with the idea, I'm going to kick it back out to somebody else. And you have to have a lot of team discipline to be able to realize that. And okay, and just continue to limit their threes. And if they do get a shot off, you'll be able to close out well and force a tough shot. So the whole game plan was, okay, we're going to limit their threes. And when you do that, you got to give up something. And sometimes, you know, they gave up a few shots at the basket because of the game plan focus of being unlimited on the threes. And the game wore on, you know, they started to foul us. The only reason we got close in the number of fouls is, actually, again, almost every game here, our opponents out shooting us free throws 2-1 unless it gets in the last minute. But, you know, I remember Jesse Evans' teams used to do this. You know, when teams would press it in the game, find a guy, basically do a full court backdoor. You break to the ball and then go long. And Kobe Julian had three baskets in the last 3 minutes and basically shots at the basket, but throwing the ball long. Joe Charles did a great job of hitting him on some of those passes. And that put the game away.
You know, if you looking at the stats again, six out of the eight guys had a steal. All eight guys had a rebound. Hosanna had two turnovers. You know, Kobe didn't have a turnover. Joe Charles didn't have a Kentel Garnett. None of them had turnovers. And the guys come in and off the bench as well with Ratliff and Fields. No turnovers. Just being able to secure the ball and being able to do those things, and everybody contributing with the steals and the rebounds. This was a really good team effort, I thought.
Yeah. All eight players contributed. Coaching staff had a great game plan. And let's talk about the turnovers. One of the reasons that Troy only made 4 3-pointers was because the Cajuns only had 5 turnovers, 1 in the first half, 4 in the second. If you're not turning the ball over, it makes it tougher for them to get any transition threes, you know, where you're going to have the defense unbalanced. So I think the team was actually more patient with the ball and more focused on not turning it over. Like I said, letting Hosanna get in the proper position. So all eight players did well. Career game for Hosanna, not only had his 25 points, he had a good rebounding game with 7 and 4 assists. You talked about the good team play. 4 guys were ended up in double figures. So may have been our most complete game of the season, considering it was a true road game.
It was a well-played game. A little, I won't say sloppy, but maybe a little sloppy there, with about 3 minutes left in the game. But at the same time, I think that's nitpicking. If you can play 36, 37 minutes of pretty good or very good basketball there, I'll take 3 or 4 minutes of a little getting out of control there. So,
well, some of that you talk about there, I think it was where we fouled the Wolves a few times as they were driving the basket, trying to push the pace. And I know the TV guy,
you know,
Plus was saying, okay, that's not really not what the Cajuns should be doing. But
right.
Coach Marlin in his postgame show indicated he was okay with it. I guess he figured he didn't want them to get an and one or get a layup or like that.
Yeah, I think some of those, though, and we've talked about in the past, when we're talking about a hard foul or making sure that they don't get the and one if you're going to foul. But the other thing, Hosanna did a very good job of moving his feet, I thought, in that game, and did not. There were several times, especially when he had 3 fouls, he let the guy score. And I'm like, okay, I'm okay with that because he's going to stay in the game longer. and he was having a good game on offense, so you don't want to sit him because of foul trouble. So
but true.
It's all good.
And late in the game, too, you know, when they drive within a lane, you know, so sometimes they're going to kick it back out. But if you get a dunk sometimes late in the game like that, that might fire the crowd up a little bit. And so there's not as much energy that comes from a free throw as a dunk. So really no complaints about this game at all. Again, if you have to ask me what was the key number in the game, it was that Arkansas State only made 4 threes in the game. And they shot 21% from three. And they're one of the top 3 points to the teams in the league. I've said this for years. Defenses need to chase their focus. Sometimes it's okay to get the layups and just make sure you limit the three.
Yep.
And we've done a pretty good job here in the last few games of that. You know, in the James Madison, Coastal Carolina, Troy, and Arkansas State, I think all 4 games our opponents shot under 30% from three. You have to do that because, you know, we're not really a shot-blocking team inside.
Yes, and all of that, though, without the height, you're going to give up that basket down low. But for a 3-point shooting team like the Cajuns are, you're willing to trade twos for threes. So, which the Cajuns only shot 13 threes and made 5 of them. So, but that had a lot to do with Hosanna having the hot hand. So.
Right. I give credit to the Cajun staff, guards, too, for feeding the hot hand. You know, I really believe in feeding the hot hand. I know people look at the statistics and say, well, there's no such thing. And there really is, because I've played enough basketball to know is when hot hand goes away, is because when the defense adjusts.
Yeah.
Okay. So before the trip started, we said we need to get at least one. After the trip's over, you regret not having 2 because of all the turnovers at Troy. You know, got another trip this week. Another Wednesday, Saturday matchup. We go to Texas State on Wednesday night. And I presume the team's leaving today. I don't know if they're going by bus or flying. Do you know?
They're flying out this afternoon. They will fly back on Thursday morning. And they'll fly back on Thursday morning, then they will bus on Friday to Mobile.
Okay.
You know, they're probably, and then bus back after the game.
Probably going commercial to Texas State. Yes. Probably fly to Austin or something like that.
Correct. Austin or San Antonio, it's whichever flight's cheaper, honestly. They're both the same distance.
Okay. Well, so the weather won't be a factor on the travel then. You know, I'm sure the planes are flying. I think things are supposed to be above freezing this afternoon.
Yes.
So Texas State, I looked at their schedule. You know, in pre-conference, they won the games you'd expect them to win and lost the games you'd expect them to lose, pretty much. But they, overall, they're 7-10, and that's generally because of the 1-4 Sun Belt Conference record. But, you know, they're one of the teams that are like us. They played a home game, then they got the middle of, then they went 4 straight on the road. And now they got a couple of home games. They've only played 5 home games, and they're 3-2. So last week they lost at Arkansas State. The close game, 85-82, higher scoring game than you see the Bobcats usually play. Then they beat ULM by 13 in Monroe. But I looked at their stats, and I was a little surprised. They actually score 70 points a game. They give up 70, but 70 is a little higher than they usually score. Maybe some of that because they got a little behind and had to push it. But they usually try to play games in the 60s under the previous staff and under this staff as well. You know, sometimes I look at stats and say, okay, where were the Cajuns might have an advantage? And the Bobcats actually give up 16 points a game off turnovers, and they only get 11 off turnovers. So there's a little 5-point swing here and there. So if we can turn them over, maybe we can score. Their leading scorer is number 5, Jordan Mason. Like most teams in the Sun Belt, he's a guard. He scored 13 points a game. Their best overall player, though, might be their leading inside guy, number 24, Brandon Love. He averages 12 points and 6 rebounds. I noticed neither player shoots many threes, but the team shoots 15 threes a game. So the other guys would just compliment them with threes. So we'll see what happens Wednesday night. You know, I think it's a winnable game for the Cajuns, but no guarantee, of course. Bobcats, again, have only played 5 home games. They're going to be happy to be home. They have a winning record in those home games. Every road game is tough.
Yeah.
We play well, force some turnovers, we'll chance have a good chance to be successful.
Yeah, Texas State is a team I can't get a handle on yet. So, and And to your point, they won the games they should have and lost the games they probably would have. I'm a little bit surprised, though, even going on the road and losing to ULM.
No, they beat ULM. That's their one conference.
Beating ULM. I'm still a little surprised at that. I thought ULM was going to have a little bit better of a team, and they may still, but
still in their conference play.
So
then, like you just talked about, the travel will bust a Mobile on Saturday, Friday plays Alabama on Saturday, and this is a team that every year, if they start slow, don't worry. They're going to get better because half their team is going to be transfers.
Yeah.
And their two main guys are transfers. We'll get into them here in a minute. They're 9-8 overall. They've got a 2-3 Sun Belt Conference record. I think they played mostly road games as well. Again, the game's at 3 on Saturday. One of the things that surprised people is they lost to Mobile College non-D1 in game one. Well, they probably underestimated them. Another school right in their own city. Probably up for the game. A lot of transfers. Played the first time a game together. And they're going to get better. And they've been really up and down. This last weekend shows that. They lost badly by 37 points to JMU on Thursday. They turn around and give Marshall their first home loss of the in conference of the year. And they beat them by 6. We'll see how much they've improved on Thursday night. You know, back up, try to watch part of that game because we play on Wednesday and Troy will play South Alabama on Thursday. You know, the 5-0 team against a team that was in the conference finals last year and just gave one of the team conference leaders their first loss. I looked at their stats. They score 74 to give up 77. I think that's may have been skewed a little bit by losing by almost 40 points at JMU. Their top scorer is number 2, Isaiah Gaither. He's their best player probably overall. He averages 17 points a game. He's second on the team in assists, second on the team in rebounds. He's first in steals, one of the top steal getters in the Sun Belt Conference. He's a transfer from Assumption. I looked at Assumption's a Northeast 10 school, like a Division II school up in Connecticut.
Okay.
So they took somebody who's a good player from a lower level school. He's performing just as well at South Al as he was at a lower level. Last year, I recall, South Alabama's two best players were also transfers. They had the inside guy named Samuel. I forget the name of the long-range bomber they had who was from some school in Minnesota that was Division II. So they're onto something maybe at the South Alabama with finding players from the lower level and bringing them up. Their top rebound is number 13, Thomas Howell. Is that name sound familiar? Because he's another Sun Belt Conference transfer. Recall where he played last year?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
ULM. He actually gave Jordan some pretty good competition at times. He actually had better numbers at ULM last year. He averaged 10 points and 8 rebounds. Rebounds are similar, scoring a little less this year, probably because Isaiah Gaither's taking a lot of shots. However, their best returnee of the players coming back is number 0, a guy named Tyrell Jones. It's his second year at Alabama. He played at Auburn previously. He's the second leading scorer on the team. That name sounds familiar because he gave us a lot of trouble in the Sun Belt Conference Championship game a year ago where he got 10 rebounds out of guard. And Gaither and Jones both had over 20. I think Jones had 21, Gaither had 25, and they're winning Marshall. So they're capable of going off. We'll see what happens against Troy. But, you know, this will be the first time we play since the Sun Belt Conference Championship game of a year ago, and I'm sure the Jags remember that game. They'll be up for us Saturday afternoon. So, again, trip.
Rich Riley's teams have given the Cajuns fits for a while now, even when he was at Nichols. So he likes the transfers. He likes to bring them in. But like you said, it takes them a while to gel. I'm very interested to watch the game on Thursday night when they play Troy, as you mentioned.
Last year, had South Alabama got into one of the pay-for-play tournaments, I think they would have done well. At the end of the season, they were playing very well. I thought other than the Cajuns, the end of the season last year, they were the best team in the league. So the two best teams. But maybe not overall, but because of South Alabama's penchant for getting transfers, and they get better as the year goes along. Don't let that loss to Mobile fool you. Remember, they just beat Marshall, and we had a tough time with Marshall when we went on the road.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, following this trip, we'll finally get home for 6 straight. I'm going to mention it again. This is going to be after Saturday. We'll have played 17 D1 games, and 13 of them will have been away from the Cajun Dome. So we'll be due for that may be why the record's only 9-8 when we expected a little better. But maybe we can make up for that at the home starting next week.
You know, I'm not overly worried about the record at this point. We talked about a little bit about it off air. It's coming down, unfortunately, for any Sunbelt team, pretty much is going to have to be 3 days in March. The key here is to get your record, though, to where you don't want to play four games in March, you know, type of deal. You want to get up there, and the Cajuns are not that far out of a spot or two that can move up. So,
yeah, when we lost them, I remember what Tim Floyd was at UNO, he said he'd always look at how many home wins you have, go undefeated at home, how many road wins. So we're basically even. We have one home loss and one road win. So we're even. Yeah. And play in March, as you talked about, there's no team who ever wins this tournament if they're playing poorly going to the tournament. I know people say, well, you can be 2-14 league and win the tournament. That doesn't happen. The teams that win the tournament are teams that are improving throughout February and playing their best when the conference tournament arrives. So, so we need to get on that journey of improving. And maybe we started at Arkansas State on Saturday. Let's let it continue this week on the road.
And, you know, all of that, Mike, I think all of these games give the opportunity to Ratliff and Hardy and Fields to get a little more playing time. So as the end of the season comes, hopefully they're able, if Katinje or someone else gets in foul trouble, someone's not having a good night. Michael Thomas's playing time, giving him some minutes right now, is all going to be useful as it comes down to the end of the season.
Speaking of that, I presume Butler is going to make the trip. Not 100% sure, but presume he is.
I would assume, too. I haven't heard anything different.
And I don't think about Hardy either. I don't know what the concussion protocol is. He was hurt Wednesday. Yep. The next Wednesday will be 1 week. So I have no idea if he's making the trip or not. I'll try to find out before we tip off tomorrow, but I can't help the listeners right now with that question.
Yep. Okay. Well, good deal, Mike. Any last thoughts on anything there before we sign off for the day?
Just a reminder, 7 o'clock Wednesday, 3 o'clock Saturday, and I'm not quite sure if we have a doubleheader the following Thursday, Saturday or not.
When we're at home against Texas State, we're at 7 o'clock. No, I'm sorry. That's the week after that. Arkansas State, it must be a doubleheader because we're at 7:30 on Thursday and 7 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah.
So the Thursday game must be
Saturday. Women can start a little earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be looking forward to the team coming back home, but we'll be watching, and hopefully we can have some good analysis for the fans when we get together next week.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, Mike, as always. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Stay warm, folks.
Yes. You've been listening to We're Talking. We've been talking basketball, Raging Cajun basketball. For Mike Hebert, I'm Craig Melanson. Thanks for listening.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.